Blog Talk Radio.
I am living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we can walk it out. Ooh, mountain, we can walk it out.
Wow, just in case you folks didn't recognize what today is a blessing day. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Because if you are listening to this show, that means you've been blessed to be alive today. Hello. So let's rejoice in that. Fasten your seatbelt. Good morning, Dr. Clark.
Good morning, Dr. Brown, and to everyone who may be listening out there today. Thank you for joining us again as we continue to have the conversation about grief and loss, and having it in a way that we can more celebrate it than be brought down by the heaviness that it can sometimes bring along with it. And so I'm glad to be here with you today and to actually share a couple of things with you as time permits. I don't know if we want to do the question first, Mr. Brown, or do we want to get into the subject matter first?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get the question out the way. I'm sure the person's been sitting there eager on the bits, and hopefully they've pointed to the right people who they think need to possibly hear this, which is always good. And then we'll go on into your show uninterrupted. And so our question today is, where does religion, or does religion have a place in psychology as we talk about grief, loss, or just in general, does religion really have a place?
Absolutely. And the place that it holds depends on the individual, whether or not they consider themselves to be a spiritual person, to have a spiritual connection of some sort, to have a spiritual belief. That goes back to part of that mindset shift that we discussed earlier, my MBA, the mindset, the beliefs, and then our actions. Because if we've grown up with a belief system that has included a spirituality component in there, then that spiritual component goes with us in every area of life that we have. And so there are many, many times when individuals who are experiencing grief and loss say that they would not have been able to get through the hardest hit if it had not been for their belief system in their higher being. Now, on the flip side, there are times where their belief in their higher being, that relationship becomes, I don't want to say estranged, but it becomes challenging during grief and loss because they become angry, spiritual being, or that higher being, because they feel as if they were so supreme and if they were almighty and if they could do and control all things, why would they allow such an act to happen? And so spirituality and religion plays a huge role in life and grief, but again, to the extent that it plays a role in that individual's life.
Wow. Let me wrap that question, that answer up with one other small piece. You and I both know it's not about us. It's about the people that we are have an opportunity to assist in their grief, loss, or whatever else is going on, so long as it's within our circle of professionalism. But has it ever, on a personal level, gotten to a point for you, being a believer and your teaching says, wait a minute, I need to go to a different place than what I've been trained to, because God has to come into this equation. So we're not talking about the receiver, the patient on the end, for lack of a better word, folks, because you're not always patient. You just may be going through something, okay? But for the sake of this conversation, doctor, have you ever had that experience? And if so, what did you do about it when you said, you know what, I need to put that mental health component down for a second and go here, because I know this is what this person needs, or this is what where I sense that they're coming from anyway. And is that a conflict? Can you address that for us? I know it's a tough one, but.
So let me make sure I understand it right. So if I'm sitting with someone and issues come up or concerns come up, and my gut is telling me that there's not a theoretical orientation that can address this, I need to do it in a different way. Is that what you're asking? Do I go there with them?
That's the ticket.
Okay. So I don't compromise in saying that I'm a believer. And I make that known with everyone that I sit with. I let them know that before they get there, I'm praying about that conversation we're going to have. And that even if I'm looking to them with a theoretical perspective, doing that theoretical perspective from my faith-based strength. And so it's always going to be there for me. Now, they say in school that you're not supposed to bring up religion or spirituality, but the conflict of that was, it's a part of the assessment process. And so that was the best part of the assessment for me, because once I got to that question and asked if they had a spiritual belief or background, as soon as they said yes, and that allowed me to take us to a whole different space. But even when I'm sitting with someone in my office, I will ask them, what have been measures that you've used to cope? And once they say anything remotely close to prayer or, you know, my higher being, then that opens the door for me to take us to another space and to look at things differently. But guess what? Sometimes they don't want to hear the spiritual part. Yes, that's where I am, but I don't feel like God right now. And so we deal with that as well. And in loss and grief, that comes up a lot. I don't want to deal with him right now, because I'm dealing with the here and now, because he brings us through on the spiritual and the supernatural level. In the physical, that's when I need somebody or someone that's tangible, that I can touch, that I can feel, that I can hold on to, that I can cry in their arms. And sometimes it takes time to get back to that side through this whole process. But yes, I'll go there if I need to.
Whew, I guess we're talking about professional integrity, our spiritual integrity, being grounded. And I have no apologies for sharing that particular question, because I'm sure, like many of our listeners, I got a lot out of that one, and a good reminder as well, because I personally have been conflicted from time to time, because religion dominated the conversation, and my clients gave no room for any level of psychology. They only wanted to hear it one way. I'm sure you've seen that as well.
Yes.
So meet them where they are at.
Absolutely.
And because my commitment to my study and profession may be pretty darn good, but my commitment to Jesus is a whole lot stronger.
Amen.
I may not get the same titles of bishop, deacon, and all of that, but in November of 2017, when I became ordained, I know that's late, folks, but it's better late than never, I had to go through this with myself to see what was going to change, because it was already gnawing at me anyway. And so even for you to hear you say it, that you were excited for that they went there, so you could get that out the way and put it right there on Front Street, and there's not going to be a conflict. Outstanding. Thank you. And that's all the questions that we have for today. But folks, turn off, because she's getting ready to bring you even some deeper stuff that you're going to need to get a pen, hold on to, or just replay this until you get it right, just like the songs that we listen to that have our favorite beats attached. Go ahead, Dr. Clark.
I'm actually going to let you all in on a little something today. I want to talk about the power to become your own expert healer. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but then I'm also going to give you all a sneak peek into my book by sharing the introduction with you all. Because it's when I say the power to become your own expert healer is really what the book is about. When we talk about when numb is not enough and being able to embrace the pain and be able to live a life that's intentional and purpose-driven so that we honor the loved one, that's being your own expert healer. Because that's where you learn how to take ownership of your grief, take ownership of your emotions, and ownership of your grieving process, and knowing that it's your own, and knowing when you need to call on someone, when you need to just take space and be by yourself. It helps you be able to determine how you need to show up in a room, if you need to show up in a room, and it allows us to be able to put certain safeguards in place for us. We don't want to encapsulate ourselves in a bubble, but because the process of grief and loss and mourning, because that journey is so delicate, there are times where we may need to put some barriers up to protect us against some of the non-intentional and unsolicited advice or actions that we may get from others that can potentially send us back into a downward spiral. So I wanted to share just a little bit about how I am and my siblings, my mom and I, how we are learning through our experience to become our own expert healers. So it sounds a little something like this. Life takes us on a journey that has many twists and turns. Most oftentimes, we don't know what's around the next bend. Along the way, we come up against experiences that sometimes knock us on our bottom, leaving us shaken to our core. Death has a way of doing just that. Our experience of each loss is different for everyone in every situation, and it all depends on the relationship that we've had or have not had with the loved one that passed. Grief and loss is a matter of the heart. And what does that mean? I'm so glad that you asked. The way we digest loss is in direct correlation to how we perceive the person and what position they hold in our inner being. The impact of the loss of a high school friend, a coworker, a neighbor, or a church member may not carry the same weight as a family member. Even then, the impact of a particular family member is connected to the seat or space they hold in our heart. When that family member is of close relation, such as a parent, a sibling, a grandparent, a close cousin, the loss takes on a different meaning. One step further, parental loss in particular carries its own weight, which seems to be heavier than anything that you've ever picked up. So I thought. Imagine when the loss of a sibling, an only sibling, either sister or brother who held several positions in your heart. Big brother, best friend, counselor, critic, bully, son, nephew, cousin, brother, comedian, superstar, favorite artist, fat boy, that list goes on and on. So the impact of that loss is attached to every category or label held by that sibling to you. That's where my other siblings, many of my family members, and I find ourselves when we are challenged with moving forward after the loss of my brother. In particular, my mother, my sister, and I all have been left with not just one boy, but many and too many to name. So it's my prayer that as we share in our journey and we learn how to embrace the pain and move towards living a purpose-driven life that honors your loved one, that you too will learn how to honor your loved one through how you live. This is an experience of discovering the differences between grief, loss, and mourning, and why each is important to have in a time of death of a loved one. The stages of grief and understanding how one may manifest the results of which will be shared via our personal encounters with each stage and strategies used to move forward daily. Stories will be shared about the pain that is ever so real to this day and the challenges faced to move forward step by step. The journey is far from over, and the journey is far from easy. The journey has come with many bumps, bruises, scars, fractures, and even broken bones at times. However, what we have learned to do as individuals drives us to keep going. Everyone is different. Therefore, what has brought a sense of healing to one may not be what works for someone else. My desire is that there is one tool or strategy or suggestion that will inspire you to keep living through the pain and finding a form of happiness. The memory of the loss will forever be with you. The grieving process may truly never end, but life does not have to stop. In fact, it can and it won't. If you stop living, you stop honoring the loved one that you lost. But before I even get started, I would be remiss if I didn't share my thoughts and my feelings and emotions behind the passing of my father. As I write, I do so in the midst of a flood of emotions as this is the two-year anniversary of his tomorrow. And that day was blurred last year as we were in the midst of doing the trips to celebrate my brother who passed just shy of a year from my dad. The loss of my dad was so emotionally draining. The circumstances surrounding his demise left the older siblings with no closure. To this day, we have not been able to get full resolve due to the chaos surrounding his passing. As I continue to grow from the experience, all I have to hold on to are those moments in time when it was just him and I. My older sister was definitely the queen, but he and I had our own relationship. My dad worked for the school district, so I would help him deliver board reports once a month. He and I would call ourselves going running around the track at the local high school. My dad weighed only about 100 pounds wet, so to see him in his corduroy jeans and t-shirt running around the track was nothing more than comedy than anything else. He taught me how to drive a stick shift on my uncle's truck. As a family, we would go to church, and I remember him being tone deaf, trying to sing in the choir at church, marching down the aisle in his bell-bottom pants. He was such a naturally funny guy, and it's those memories that I have to hold on to daily to block out the pain and the sorrow of not being able to lay him to rest in the proper manner. I still fight the impact of some of those stages of grief, and even though I know in my head and my heart that he's in a better place, the human side of me wants to leave. So through our journeys, it's my desire to share pieces of our process that is springing us forward to embrace the pain and honor the life and live intentionally. And there will be moments throughout this journey where you find it's too hard to bear. And those are the moments I invite you to give yourself grace and pace, grace for the pace. You will get through it. The moments of deep sorrow are an indication of the love that you hold for the lost. And this is a good thing. So buckle up, sit up straight, and get ready to live again. And so this is how I am becoming my own expert healer. And so there will be more to come. And I just wanted to share a little piece of what you can expect to experience when you purchase the book. So it's already, a piece of it has already been sent to the editor. So I'm excited about that as the writing process continues. As I continue to go through this journey of becoming my own expert healer, I'm hoping that there will be something in there to help others along this journey so that they can become their own expert healers as well. Dr. Brown? Hello?
Still here. I'm sorry. My mouth was hanging open as I was processing all of what you were sharing as much as I could. Talking about putting it all on the table and embracing your pain and turning it into something powerful to be proud of rather than a shame. I tipped my hat. That was one for the records, I'll tell you. And for you ladies and gentlemen, if you don't get the book for yourself, I'm not going to be mad at you. but at least get it for somebody else so that you can help them through the day. You know, one of my favorite songs, Christian songs, is I Just Want to Help Somebody. I think most of you folks, believers, actually know that song. It's one to really wake up, and it's probably one of the most unselfish songs that I've ever heard of, but it's inspired by the gift that we got, which is we was able to rise up today. So you folks get that book. If there's any opportunity for pre-order or sales, I think we need to go ahead and get that locked in, because I think they're going to be falling off the shelf, flying off the shelf really fast. Dr. Clark, do you have an idea of the publication date, and can the books be pre-ordered?
The goal that I am working on is to have this ready to go by August. So I talked to the editor. She has the first section. As I continue to write, the writing process is scheduled to be completed by the 15th of May so that it can go through all its have proper time to go through the formatting and all of that. My desire is to be ready to take pre-orders by the end of June, because we will be doing, I need to find out when the event is going to be, so we will be doing an event to highlight the book, to have a discussion with me about the book, and to be able to get it. Hopefully it'll be ready for print at that time.
And you'll be doing a book signing and all that kind of good stuff, I'm sure?
Yes, we will be doing a book signing.
Wow.
It will be myself and maybe two other authors sharing that.
Well, it just builds up for you, and we couldn't be more proud and looking forward to this exciting opportunity. As I was listening, I thought about some of the folks who also may tune in or were already tuned in through the website. You went through something writing that. Can you describe what you had gone through to have the courage and the strength to put that out? It did sound as though you were going pretty fast to make sure that we could get all our words in a little bit of time that we had, but I think that there was more to it than that, because we sensed a reasonable explanation. Not that we want to dig up any pain, but we didn't hear that I'm still hurt behind it. It was, yeah, I'm still hurt, but I can go on now. Because it sounds to me just like what you said, you had already embraced your pain and you were healed enough to move forward. And from what you say, it does not mean that the pain went away. It's just that you can coexist with the pain now instead of letting it dominate you and control you. Am I on the right page?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I happen to be writing the section now where I had an initial interview with my two older sisters, and as I sit and listen to that interview, which was almost about a year old now, just all those things started flooding back, and as I started to summarize and to type those words, of course, those emotions just came back. So that's been one of the challenges. So it's been the challenge and it's been the strength for me in being able to write through the emotions. And it's the emotion, I think, has helped to shape the language and the words used. And so what was helpful for me after I did my older sister, I called her and I said, I just wanted to make sure that I captured what you said correctly. And so as I read it back to her, she was like, that's it, sister, that's it. I'm so proud of you. And so now when we have our next conversation, we'll be able to see what that journey has been like over almost the course of a year from where they started to where they see themselves now.
Absolutely.
And what
Let
I
me
am
one
struggling
other question.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask the question before you go into your closing monologue here. Did I hear you say that you were also going to interview your sisters?
I did. I had my first interview with, I invited all of the siblings, all of the older siblings. My very oldest sister, who we just reconnected with in 2014, I talk about that in the book because that means her experience is very different, right? She just reconnected in 2014. We were separated for 36 years. And then to be reunited and then have to experience these two losses. My older brother, Jace, who is in Oklahoma, my sister that's here with me that I've grown up with, and then my sister that lived with my father. So I invited all of us, but only my oldest sister, who's older than all of us, the one we've reunited with, and my sister, who I share a home with, they were the only ones that showed up. And so I talk about that as well. It's okay, because everyone has to do it in their time, right? It's a journey. And maybe that wasn't the time for them to be able to sit and to be able to have a dialogue. And that's okay. So now I'm thinking, do I reach out to them again before the end, or do I just let them have their process? So I had that conversation with myself in my mind. Am I going to reach out to them again, or am I just going to highlight those relationships that I already have and that information that I already have?
Okay. What one more piece that just came to mind. When you're talking to your family remembers everything about you from the time that they're introduced as a child or even an infant. I mean, there's a certain kind of a bond. I'm sure you'll agree to that. However, at some point, you're no longer that kid, but the family member still only sees the kid that they grew up with for at least maybe 15, 20 years or whatever the case might be. So was it a little challenging when your sister or siblings are sitting across the table from you and you're trying to have a serious conversation and you're being Dr. Clark and they remember you by whatever your nickname may have been when you were a child? Does that ever come into play? Are they respectful enough to say, okay, we're down with your accomplishment and everything's okay, but we still remember you as, anyway, you get the idea.
But, you know, they do. They respect my work, but sometimes they identify me by my work. And so I'm always identified as Dr. Clark and analyzing things. Uh-oh, there she goes again. So I'm often that kid sometimes goes to the wayside because now they so label, they connect me so much to my label, and now I am the go-to person. And so even in how I experience this, which I'll talk about in the book, I found myself falling into mental health mode, right, to try to get through it. And it was like, mental health what? I can't be mental health anything. I'm me. This is me now. I'm not a text, but it's me. This is me. It's my life now. There's not a theory. There's not a textbook. There's not, you know, a theoretical orientation that can dictate this process for me. Because my aunt literally had to tell me, okay, baby, I need you to breathe. Because I went immediately into work mode. I gotta call the center. I gotta get a picture. I gotta check on my mom. I gotta put this on picture. And she was like, "Hold up, wait a minute. I need you to just breathe. It's okay."
Exactly.
So
wow.
They respect my position too much sometimes.
Well, I gotta respect it even a little bit more here with 60 seconds to wrap this up.
Okay. So as we breathe, I know that was a lot and it was a whirlwind that came at you guys, but I just felt I needed to share that with you guys. So as we take a deep breath in and breathe out and do that a couple more times, as I talk about from Dr. Alan Wolfe, rediscovering the capacity to experience joy and happiness in life is one of my ultimate goals. How I get there, if I get there, depends on my ability to find meaning in my continued living. In large part, my happiness depends on me, not others. Now more than ever, I must seek joyful moments to let me breathe. Experiencing joy helps me know that I'm alive. I will close my eyes and embrace moments of happiness. Until next time, give yourself room to breathe.
The silence is quiet. And it feels I know you feel like dying, but I promise we